And this is the Hagmann Report for today. It is Thursday, October 4th, 2018. You know, the news headlines, so much about Kavanaugh, so much about, you see what dominates the news. But one of the issues, perhaps one of the most important issues that would impact our nation and perhaps define the economic legacy of the Donald Trump presidency, at least the first term, is the reformatting. I suppose this is the right word, the reformatting of NAFTA, what was once considered NAFTA, now known as USMC, the United States Mexico-Canadian Agreement. And if you, the listener and viewer, if you're as confused as Joe and I are, well, you turn to experts. We have with us an economics expert, a gentleman that is, you can find him, by the way, on Facebook. You can find his portfolio at, under his name at muckrack.com. We're going to put the links to this Facebook and his portfolio, as well as Twitter, within our program description. But Dr. Michael Bussler, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, Bussler, he is a public policy analyst. He's an economic expert. He's a professor of finance at Stockton University in New Jersey. He is a featured columnist at Newsmax, Life Gazette, and Town Hall. Now, if you've read any of his work, as we have, you will understand that this gentleman is, in my view, perhaps one of the best people that could come on and explain what's going on with this particular agreement and where the United States stands, if we are benefiting, kind of break it down for us. So with that, and folks, please take a look at his work. And you'll really appreciate the knowledge of this gentleman. And again, Dr. Michael Bussler, sir, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here, and thank you for that introduction.
Well, it's well deserved. Did I pronounce your last name correctly? I've just seen it written in writing. I haven't.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Bussler. It was perfect.
All right, sir. So, well, thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
And we are not economic experts.
No.
Joe can barely balance his checkbook, and like most Americans. although I do a little bit better because I give it to my wife. But having said all of that, where do we stand? Where do we stand on all of this?
Yeah. So here's the thing. Trump realizes that free trade, fair free trade, benefits everybody. And just very, very simply, if each country can produce what it does most efficiently and then trade for the other things, everybody makes out better. A quick example I use with my classes, the U.S. is very good at growing wheat. We can use a little bit of resources, get a lot of wheat. If we had to grow coffee on it by ourselves, we'd have to use a lot of resources, not get much coffee, because we simply don't have a real good climate for coffee. Colombia, say, in South America, on the other hand, is exactly opposite. They can use a little bit of resource and get a lot of coffee. If they try to grow their own wheat, they don't have a good climate for it, they're going to use a lot of resources, not get much wheat. So it makes sense for the U.S. to grow all the wheat, and we're using a small amount of resources, get a lot of wheat, and let Colombia grow the coffee, using small resources, get a lot of coffee, and then we trade back and forth, and both countries end up with more wheat and more coffee. So free trade benefits everyone. The problem was, when President Trump got into office, he took a look at every one of the trade agreements, NAFTA, the agreement with the European Union, our agreements with China, South Korea, Japan. Every single one of the agreements, for whatever reason, are slanted in favor of our trading partners and to the detriment of the U.S. For example, with the European Union, if they produce a car in France or Italy, sell it in the U.S., we charge them a 2.5% tariff. If we make a car in the U.S. and sell it in Europe, they charge us a 10% tariff. The result is we buy a lot of their cars, money flowing out of the country. They buy very few of our cars, not much of their money flowing into the country. We have a huge negative balance of trade to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars per year. So President Trump said, we have to fix this, and we have to do it quickly. Now, President Trump is not a politician. He's a business person. A politician would say, we have a problem. Let's convene a summit at the end of the year. Then we'll go back and we'll discuss it with our leaders next spring. We'll meet again maybe in the fall. And before you know it, we'll kick the can down the road to the next president. A business person says, you have a serious problem, especially if it's affecting your bottom line. You must confront it immediately. And that's what Trump is trying to do, confront all of these bad trade agreements immediately. So he said to our trading partners, come to the table and let's renegotiate this. Well, everyone said, we're in a real favorable position. We're not in a hurry to renegotiate anything. Again, what does a business person do when you have a reluctant negotiating partner? You create a sense of urgency. So what President Trump did, he said, well, I'm putting big tariffs on everything right away. And since most of those countries, particularly countries like China, depend on the U.S. to buy large amounts of their output, by putting on these tariffs, he's bringing the trading partners to the table much more quickly. So we've signed an agreement with Mexico. Trump said to Canada, if you're not here by September 30th, we're moving ahead without you. Canada came to the table literally at the last minute to come up with an agreement. We'll talk about that in a second. He's already had the head of the European Union to the White House. They had a news conference afterwards, and they said they're going to work toward trying to get to a no-tariff policy, which is really what everybody would like. You'll not get there because of political considerations, but that's where you'd like to be. He's got an agreement with South Korea. They're working with Japan. I believe China will be to the table before the end of the year. Asked me specifically.
I just want to say this. Folks, that is exactly, well, I think, what everyone needs to hear. That's how to explain. For me, I understood that exactly. And
because you hear the media explaining the trade deficits all the time, but they never get into examples or you know, you hear the statistics, well, the U.S. has a trade deficit of $300 billion with Canada, but they never tell you why. And the way you just explain it, just on the 7.5% that's left on the table, the U.S. loses with the EU trade on cars with Europe. That obviously creates a huge incentive for the U.S. to send as many cars over here add and build to that trade deficit, having the U.S. owe them money. So this new agreement, this evens this out, evens out the playing field?
It's not perfect. It doesn't completely even it out. But it was so lopsided that at least it's moving in the right direction. You know, the example I like to use, people say, well, what do you mean it's lopsided? I said, well, if you think of us playing a baseball game with Canada or Mexico, and we get three outs every inning, for some reason, we decided to give them four outs every inning. And after a couple of years, you notice we're losing every baseball game. So essentially, Trump is trying to get back to everybody playing by the same set of rules. Now, specifically, when NAFTA was signed, because Mexico has extremely low wage rates and they have very lax environmental laws, many of the car manufacturers in the U.S. said, hey, you know, it's a lot cheaper to go down and make a car in Mexico. So if you remember back in the early 90s when Ross Perot was running for president, he said, you pass NAFTA, you'll hear a big sucking sound, which will be Mexico sucking all the jobs away from the U.S. And he did have some validity to that point. So what Trump said is, and the second thing with car manufacturing, there are many cars that are made in China. Now, if China sends them over here, we charge a 2.5% tariff. They charge us a 25% tariff, by the way. On Camaros, for whatever reason, it's a 50% tariff. But so for China to avoid the 2.5% tariff, what they do is they make the car about 50-60% complete, send it to Mexico, let Mexico finish it off, and then Mexico sells it to the U.S. and doesn't have to pay any tariff at all. To stop that, Trump said that from the new agreement says at least 75% of the car and the car parts must now be produced in North America. That is either Mexico, Canada, or U.S. So that'll put a little pressure on China also to come to the table, and it will mean that more parts are produced in the U.S. The other thing Trump said was, look, you're paying your workers such a ridiculously, at least compared to our wages, ridiculously low wage that our companies are leaving. So he got them to agree to pay workers at least $16 an hour. That will minimize any advantage for companies to go, U.S. companies to go to Mexico, and it will keep much of the production here, may even bring some of it back. So you won't have any situations like happened to poor Detroit when all the car companies manufacturing left and the city was forced into bankruptcy. The new agreement does still allow for energy products to be exported to Mexico without any tariffs on them, and that was a big deal because now the U.S. is becoming such a large producer of energy, so that turned out to be a good thing. Now, with Canada, the big rub with Canada is there's a few products, but one is American dairy farmers are extremely efficient at producing dairy products. As a result, we could produce something and sell it in, willing to sell it in Canada for, say, a dollar. The Canadian dairy farmers, it costs them $3.50 to make the same product. So Canada said, we're putting on a 270% tariff on American dairy products. So something we're willing to sell for a dollar pays a $2.70 tariff, means it's now $3.70. That allows the Canadian dairy farmers who could produce a $3.50 to stay in business. The problem is it keeps the American dairy farmers out of the Canadian market. So not on all dairy products, but on many dairy products, Trump got them to reduce and almost eliminate most of that tariff. It started out on baby formula and some dry milk products, and I think some cheese products, which the people in Wisconsin I know are very very happy about. So it doesn't fix everything. There's still the lumber industry with Canada. We're still having some disputes about, and a few other things. So it doesn't go as far as we'd like to go where we have completely free trade. But considering where we were, it's moving a lot closer to a better position. Now, one other thing Trump insisted upon that some of his critics will say is not a good thing. Trump said, look, this agreement will only last for 16 years. It's not indefinite. And it will be reviewed every 6 years. And Trump's thinking was, look, I got everybody to move a little closer to free trade. Let this settle in for a few years, and maybe in 6 years, I'll be able to get them to move a little closer to free trade. The other thing Trump was considering, because technology is changing so rapidly, we don't know 5-10 years down the road what kind of products and what kind of systems we'll have in place. So to put in an agreement and say it's permanent, like we did with NAFTA, to say it's a permanent agreement is not a good idea. Now, some of the pushback will be that this is not a permanent deal and it could only be, it lasts for 16 years, but it will be reviewed after 6 years. He'll probably get some pushback on that. But his thinking was, let's get something done. At least we're moving in the right direction, and let's allow for renegotiation in a short time period.
Man, I'll tell you what, you answered the questions I had on the other. Well, there's one issue. You mentioned Canada and the United States. Now, it's my understanding dairy farmers up in Canada, they're made to, it's like a collaborative of sorts with the dairy farmers. It's very expensive to get in. Isn't that, we're fighting a kind of a socialist framework up there, are we not?
Yes, we are. You know, Canada has a little more socialistic tendencies than the U.S. does. And this is one area where the dairy farmers have put such pressure on the Canadian government. That was really the sticking point, that the Canadian dairy farmers didn't want to lose the Canadian market, because they know they're inefficient and they know the Americans can produce things a lot cheaper. But remember when I started the conversation today, I said free trade benefits everybody as long as countries produce what they can produce well, like the U.S. making the wheat, and then trade for products that you can't produce so well, like we'll trade for coffee. So Canadian dairy farmers, with all due respect, I'm not criticizing anybody, Canadian dairy farmers just aren't nearly as efficient at producing milk as U.S. dairy farmers. So if you want truly free trade, you should allow the American dairy farmers to produce the milk and sell it in Canada, and let Canada work on producing goods where they have an advantage over us.
Fantastic. Okay, very well explained. Folks, we're talking with economics expert Dr. Michael Bussler. He is a public policy analyst, economics expert, and a professor of finance at Stockton. Let me tell you something, okay? What you're hearing right now, you'd have to pay for this, seriously, for education. And I cannot recommend following Michael Bussler enough on Twitter. It's at M Bussler. All right. So we're following him. And on Twitter right now, Trickle Down Economics, surprise, it works. That's posted on medium.com. You want to touch on that, because that's a brilliant article. I don't want to take away anything from that or even misconstrue that, but I thought that was just a brilliant write up there.
Yeah. So in order for our economy to grow, and when President Trump got into office, he realized that the biggest problem the U.S. has is our economy has not seen good economic growth. As a matter of fact, the economy hasn't seen an annual growth rate of 3% prior to Trump since 2005. We haven't had an annual growth rate of 4% since the year 2000. So what Trump said is we need to get the economy growing again. That's why we have many of the problems we do. Even some of the social problems are a result of poor economic performance. And President Obama was the only president in history to serve a term in office without having at least 1 year where annual economic growth was at least 3%. Even during the Depression, we had 2 years where economic growth exceeded 3%.
Wow.
So
that's incredible.
So it is. So what President Trump wanted to do, he said, look, we have to get growth. Now, how do you get growth? Well, he took a look at what Ronald Reagan did in 1981, 82, and what Kennedy and Johnson did in 63, 64. And what they did that led to rapid growth was they cut income taxes for everyone, not just the middle class, for the upper class too. Why is that important? We have a capital-intensive economy, which means you need a lot of capital to get the economy to grow. Cutting taxes for the middle class increased demand in the economy. People went out and started to buy more things, which is good, but you need to be able to make the more things to meet the demand. So if you cut taxes, not just for the middle class, but also the highest income earners and corporations, that creates new capital. So when you create new capital, now wealthy individuals are paying less taxes. They're already spending as much as they're going to spend. So any new disposable income to them goes into investments. Corporations, the tax rate was lowered from an average of 35% down to 21%. That gives them more after-tax income after they pay dividends to stockholders, gives them more to retain earnings to finance growth. So what trickle-down economics, we call it supply-side economics. The critics use the term trickle-down economics, but that's okay. So with supply-side economics, it says you can't just cut taxes for the middle class to stimulate demand. You have to be able to meet the demand by having supply increase. And when he modeled the tax cut after what Ronald Reagan did in 1981, where the maximum tax rate went from 50%, he dropped it down all the way to 28%. Now, Trump wasn't able to do that, although he did have good success with the corporate tax rate. So when Reagan did it, it created a lot of new capital. The economy started to grow. And as a matter of fact, when it went into effect in 82, 1984, the economy grew at an annual rate of 7.5%. And in fact, from that time, really until 2007, we had good growth in the economy, a little recession in 91, a little recession in 2001, but we had good growth in the economy. So all of the critics, if you read many of the critics of what Trump has done, they'll say, well, 70% or 80% of the tax cut went to the wealthy people. And part of that is true, mostly because it's the wealthy people that pay all the taxes. Last year, the top 20% of income earners paid 84% of the taxes paid. Half of American income earners, 47% of American income earners, didn't pay any federal income tax at all. So if you're going to cut taxes, you can't cut taxes for somebody who doesn't pay any taxes. You cut taxes for people who are paying a lot. That's creating capital. Since Trump got into office, the first thing he did was get rid of the regulations that Obama put in that Obama felt would cure perceived social injustices, like the income inequality issue. Obama said was important, so he wanted to tax the wealthy to and give more programs to lower income earners to get rid of income inequality. But when Obama did that, raising taxes on the wealthy meant less capital going into the economy, less economic growth. So Trump gets into office in January 2017. February and March, he works on getting rid of all these regulations that Obama also put in to protect, he said, consumers. Since Trump has done that, from the second quarter, from April of 2017, continuing to today, the economy has grown at over a 3% rate. The tax cut was passed in November, again, for middle class and upper classes, went into effect in January. Since April of this year, the economy has been growing at a 4% annual rate. The third quarter number, which will come out at the end of this month, just 10 days before the election, I think is going to show the economy growing at about a 4.5% annual rate. So the idea with what they refer to as trickle-down economics, what I would call supply-side economics, is give everybody a tax cut, including the highest income earners. They create new capital. They invest the capital. The economy grows. As the economy grows, they hire more people. So the unemployment rate plummets down to lowest level in 50 years. Everybody ends up benefiting. As John Kennedy said, the rising tide will lift all boats. And that's exactly what Trump is trying to do. And that's what they call trickle-down economics.
Michael Bussler is our Dr. Michael Bussler, PhD, is our guest. He's an economics expert. Michael, we only got about 2.5 minutes left. Any closing thoughts? Yeah. Anything we did not hit on that you want to make sure that we that's important that we need to talk about before we let you go?
Yeah, I would just say one thing. A lot of people have negative comments about Trump's style. And to be perfectly candid, sometimes he tweets some things and I find my stomach starting to churn a little bit. But even if you have a problem with his style, you can't argue with his results. The economy, now he tends to exaggerate a little bit, and I tell people, look, if you want to understand President Trump, go up to New York City, walk around the streets of Queens, talk to everybody, and you'll understand the way Trump behaves, because everybody up in Queens is like that. But in spite of the way Trump does things, and if you don't like him, you can't argue with the results that he's had. The economy is doing extremely well. On a national security issue, he's got North Korea that was ready to send nukes all over the world. He's got them stopping and even talking about denuclearization. He's got tough sanctions that he put on in Russia. They're going to have to start complying because their economy is doing terribly. The Iran agreement was awful. He got out of the Iran agreement. The Iranian economy is also doing awful. If they don't come to the table by the end of the month, beginning in November, more difficult sanctions go on, and it'll make things even tougher for them. So what Trump is doing is working, and I think we should all support him. And frankly, I would support the Republicans in the November election.
Amen to that. Wow. What an education, Dr. Michael Bussler.
I
do hope that you'll come back on our program. We're getting just immense positive feedback from our listeners, viewers, saying you made it sound easy, which it's difficult to do when you're talking about complex subject like this. So we do hope that you'll come back on.
Thank you very much. It would be my pleasure.
All right, sir. Wow. Folks, that was Dr. Michael Bussler. Follow him on Twitter, at M. Bussler.
Yeah.
Look, folks, this to understand what's really going on here economically and the winds and the difference between Obama and Trump, or difference between the last 10 administrations and Donald Trump, economically speaking. You just heard it.
So. And if you want the inside scoop on what that looks like, again, follow Michael Bussler at M. Bussler on Twitter. When we come back, Keith Hansen, New Hampshire's own on WNTK, is going to be joining us. And we're going to be with him for 1 hour. And at 8:30, at the half hour mark, he wants to take listener calls to hear from you guys. So make sure you line up on the phones. We'll be right back after this. Don't go anywhere.